1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feldis and Kale. And Dan, amazingly enough, our contract has been renewed for yet another week.
I can't believe it. I mean, the listenership is just off the charts. People are listening all across the world.
They are. They really are. And they can do that on NHTalkRadio.com. All the great shows from WKXL are on NHTalkRadio.com. And don't forget, WKXL is also the home of Boston Celtics basketball. Celtics have a big matchup tonight. They have to bounce back. They had two horrific games, one against the Pistons, the lowly Pistons, and then an even worse effort against the even lowlier Washington Wizards.
What happened?
Jason Tatum didn't show up.
Tatum's
got to show up. Anyway, we'll see what happens tonight against Denver. I'm putting my money on the Celtics because they always play better against the better teams. Why? I don't know.
I agree with you, Ken.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to talk tech here on the program today. We're going to take a quick break and then come back with our guest right after these words. Feldis and Kale will continue on 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. And our guest today is Matt Elliott. Matt is a tech journalist who writes about computers of all types, tablets, various peripherals, and Apple topics as well. And Matt started as an editor for PC Magazine back when it was a print publication. Remember print publications? That just seems like so, you know, 1990s, right? Print publications. But he also spent many years with the CNET, where he led its coverage of laptop and desktop computers. He moved from New York City to New Hampshire, good move there, in 2006, and began freelancing. He was working from home well before COVID made it fashionable. And Matt, we welcome you to Feldis and Kale. A delight to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
It is
good to be here.
It is our pleasure. I like to find out how things started for people like you. When did you become, how young were you when you considered yourself a techie?
I grew up before the internet, so I wasn't really a techie. I remember a few of my friends had computers, and I'd play one of my friends' houses, a game called High Heat Baseball that I thought was really cool. And I went home and I said, "Dad, we need to get a computer." "So why do we need a computer?" "So I want to play this baseball game." And he said that was not a good enough reason to buy an expensive computer. So I went off to college with like a word processor and had no computer experience until I got out of school. The internet, my senior year, I got my first email address, and you would have to go to the computer lab at school to check your email and send emails. So I kind of came to tech late. I was an English major and kind of talked my way into a job at PC Magazine based on my writing and editing skills more so than anything I knew about technology. And then the stable of writers they had at PC Mag at the time were very understanding and let me ask a lot of stupid questions as I learned how technology worked and what printers did and what computers did and digital cameras were new at the time. And I kind of learned the tech as I went.
So it all started with High Heat Baseball.
High Heat Baseball.
All the best stories.
That's right.
Start with High Heat Baseball.
Very good. So what's new in the tech world? I mean, we hear about things coming down the pike all the time. So what is new?
Well, I'd say the thing making headlines recently this week is a new social media app called Clubhouse. Have you guys heard of this one?
No.
It is it's like a throwback. It's voice only. Only available on iPhones. It's not on Android yet, although that's coming soon, according to the developers. But basically, it's almost like it's a little bit like a live radio or live podcasting. You get the app, and there's just a bunch of different rooms you can kind of pop into, and it's just people talking about anything. Right now, it seems like it's a lot of kind of financial advice and self-help. And but then there's, you know, rooms about people talking about a TV show or photography or you know, hobbies. But there's no text. It doesn't use your camera. It's just voice. So you pop in and there's someone leading the room, and they're kind of leading the discussion, and you can tap a button to kind of raise your hand, and if you're picked, then you can, you know, join the conversation. Otherwise, you're just kind of listening to people talk about a topic.
So this is basically basically an app for basically conference calls about different topics, basically?
Yeah. I would think one of the good use would be for politicians, as you recently were, Dan, you know, to hold a town hall. This could be a really easy way to get a lot of people in a room to talk about the topics of the day or you know, the issues of, that your campaign is most concerned with. And it's just had huge growth. It was actually China just banned it. It was available in China for a little bit. It got people found it before the Chinese government censors did. So people were able in China, in mainland China, to, you know, discuss what life is like there and reach out to other people. And so that was, I think, very exciting for a lot of young people in China before. I think it was just last week the Chinese government said, no, we would prefer that not to happen. You know, they ban all social media, all the big social media apps and networks in the country, and only allow a couple very, you know, tightly controlled and censored apps.
Does this cost money, the Clubhouse app?
No, it's free to use. It's invite only right now. They're rolling out slowly. They're up to 6 million users by last count. It's really taken off, and so much so that Facebook and Twitter are reportedly working on products to compete with it.
So
and
how
the
does
company, the company is less than a year old, and it already has a valuation over $1 billion with a B dollars. Yeah.
Wow. So how does it differ from like a Zoom format?
Well, Zoom uses your camera. This is audio only.
Just audio,
and it's not on. You can't get it on a computer. You can only get it on an iPhone right now.
Okay.
So it's just a mobile app with no video. And you know, Zoom, you have to schedule Zoom with someone. This you can just pop on and kind of see what rooms are live right now, and jump in and jump out. You know, as you wish.
So do you need?
And you could also create your own room. If you have a topic, you know, you want to, I want to talk about high heat baseball. I could create a room and see if anybody's out there that would like to talk about old video games with me.
Yeah,
interesting.
So you could practice doing radio shows on Clubhouse.
Yeah, you could get your reps on Clubhouse, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Other than Clubhouse, Matt, what else is new on the horizon out there in the tech world?
Well, I thought this would interest you, Dan, as a former state legislator. There are some laws on the books being debated right now. One in North Dakota that they are trying to stop Apple and Google, too, from forcing companies in their states to fork over the commissions that Apple and Google charge through their app stores.
Interesting.
So, you know, if I create an app and I start selling it, let's say I create my own version of Clubhouse and it's going great. Every time I sell my app, let's say I sell it for 99 cents, I have to fork over 30 cents on the dollar to Apple for every time I sell my app. And in North Dakota, they're saying that's hurting the small businesses in our state. It's hard to grow when you're forking over a third of your earnings to a monopoly, is what they're calling it. And there's similar bills, I guess, in Georgia and Arizona and Massachusetts working their way through the state houses there to prevent Apple from taking such a big cut.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What are the prospects of that passing out there in North Dakota? Has it passed already?
No, Apple has its lawyers and lobbyists saying that this is going to destroy the iPhone as you know it. that we, you know, little Apple can't possibly survive if we don't take this exorbitant fee. So I don't know if it's going to pass in North Dakota. It seems like it's less than 50-50. But all it has to, with other similar bills happening around the country, as long as one state passes it, then if you're a developer, you could move to that state and not have to pay the fee. If you're really committed to, you know, making a go at, you know, if you've got a really good idea and you want to avoid the fee on your app.
Right. In addition to all that, what about desktops right now? What's the, if you're out there shop, let's say you're listening to this program and you wanted to shop for a desktop, what's the top two or so desktops out there, computers, and what are some things people should think about when they're shopping for one?
Desktops. I've been looking at a lot of all-in-one computers recently for a PC Mag. I'm doing a lot of budget ones. I'd say you want to look at, you want to get a newer processor. So Intel just released its 11th generation core chips. So I'd target, get one of those. You want to get enough memory, at least 8 gigabytes, but probably 16 gigabytes of memory and a big enough hard drive. Most computers right now are you're getting a solid state hard drive instead of a traditional spinning hard drive that the older computers would use. Solid state, you don't get as much storage capacity, but they're much quicker at accessing data. The drive doesn't have to spool up and find the little data packet. So look for a solid state hard drive, not a spinning hard drive, and the computer will feel much faster. You know, if you have the same processor and memory in one computer with a solid state and one with a spinning hard drive, the solid state would just feel much quicker, much more responsive. But I don't know how many people are buying desktops these days. I think laptops are a far more popular pick.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what the most popular sellers were these days. Is it obviously it's not the desktop? You said laptop was outselling the desktop. What about iPads these days?
I just got my wife an iPad for her birthday. So if our house is an indication, they're still going gangbusters. I mean the iPad is by far the most popular tablet. And Apple has the higher end ones with pencil support. So you know, if you're a digital artist or you just like to jot down notes freehand instead of tapping on the screen, they've got an iPad for you. I think it's a great system. I love reading the newspaper on the iPad mm-hmm. instead of unfolding it on the kitchen table.
So would it be fair to say that they outsell desktops and laptops combined?
I would say no.
No?
I'd still say laptops are more popular. You can
really?
Just do more with a laptop with a physical keyboard
yeah.
than you can on a tablet.
So what's
I have a colleague that's trying to do all of his work on an iPad with a attachable keyboard, but I don't see the purpose in trying to pull off that feat. I prefer to use a MacBook for most of my day-to-day writing and work.
And what, so MacBooks, what are the big laptops out there, the hot selling ones, and what are, same question, if people are interested in a laptop, what should they be thinking about when they're buying one?
Well, now is a good time to buy a MacBook. Apple in November made a big announcement. They've been using Intel processors for the last, I think it was like 12, 13 years, a long time, and they've just released new models of their MacBook Air and MacBook Pro that are using their own chip. You know, Apple uses its own processors inside iPads and iPhones, and now they have they're calling it the M1 for the Macs. It's their first processor they designed in-house, and the early returns, early tests show that it's a very, very good processor, much faster than its Intel counterparts. It's just a more efficient architecture, the way they've designed this chip. And it also uses a much smaller motherboard, so they're, you know, we'll probably see some thinner design, smaller computers, without sacrificing any speed and performance. So now is a great time for a MacBook Air or Pro, and I would recommend against finding an Intel based. Even if you find an Intel based one that's discounted, I'd say it's worth the extra money to get one of the new M1 machines. It'll last longer and it'll be much faster out of the box.
We're talking tech today with Matt Elliott, who is a tech journalist. And Matt, let me ask you, where can people read your articles and your contributions to society?
Well, I review laptops and desktops with PC Magazine. So if you're shopping for a new computer, you might come across some of the reviews I wrote for PC Mag. And I also write for CNET. I do a bunch of different stuff for CNET. I do a lot of, if you're looking to watch a big event on TV and you don't have cable TV, mm-hmm. we kind of have a series going on how to watch, like the Super Bowl, if you don't have cable, which live TV streaming service can you use to find the game, or, big like political debate. And then I also do a bunch of deal tracking for CNET. CNET's increased its coverage of tech discounts and deals because they found that people are now using the internet more for that type of search, mm-hmm. versus just looking to see what is the best computer. They want to find the best computer at the best price. So not only will CNET review laptops, for example, and let you know which ones they recommend, but then we have some coverage now that will point you to the best place to pick those up. So I do a lot of deal tracking for CNET's commerce team.
We're going to take a quick break. Matt, hang in there for a couple of minutes. It's Feltus and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feltus and Kale, great to have you along with us. Matt Elliott is our guest, tech journalist, and we're talking tech. And I heard just recently that Facebook is developing a new watch, much along the lines of the Apple watches.
Yes, that is a true statement. They've had a checkered history in developing their hardware product, so it'll be interesting to see if they're able to pull this one off. It's supposedly going to run the Android's Wear OS, so it'll be a version of an Android phone, but with hooks into, obviously, Facebook's social network, where you can, ping other Facebook users and be plugged in and to the Facebook thing. So I don't know. I don't have any desire to have a Facebook tracking device on my wrist, but maybe other people will feel differently.
Do you have an Apple Watch?
I bought the first one for CNET, so I could write some articles about how to use it, and now it's collecting dust on a shelf. I'm a Fitbit wearer, Ken. I like to track. I'm a step tracker.
Step guy, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
How many steps per day on average right now, Matt?
I try to get at least 10.
Is that 10 or 10,000?
10,000.
Well, that's pretty good.
I set my
goals
low.
That's great. That's good.
Yeah. I like stats. So it's fun to keep score.
Matt, earlier you talked about laptops. You talked about the MacBook Air Pro being one of the best out there right now and coming out with some thinner designs, not sacrificing processing speed, blah, blah, blah. Can you say any else?
Blah, blah, blah.
Et cetera, et cetera. Can you, and you also write for CNET on deals. So if someone's out there and they got a budget of, let's say, $500, and they want to get some kind of processor, ideally a laptop, what advice would you give to them?
If you're at $500, I'd say get a Chromebook and not a Windows laptop. Chromebooks run Google's Chrome OS. It's basically a laptop that just gives you the Chrome browser. And you can also install, I shouldn't say that. It primarily you're accessing everything through the Chrome browser. So I do most of my work using Google Docs and Google Sheets, instead of like Microsoft Word and Excel. So mm-hmm. I could get away with using a Chromebook, but I didn't already have this MacBook because I do, 98% of my work just using the Chrome browser and the tools available through that. And then a Chromebook also lets you access the Google Play Store, so you can install different apps that way and use it there. So it's just it's for the money, you for $500, it'll feel faster than a Windows laptop that has to power this giant, unwieldy, you know, Microsoft Windows operating system.
Yep.
That can do a lot more than Chrome OS. But if you don't need all of that power, that you can get away with a Chromebook and have a much better experience than a cheap Windows laptop that'll struggle to keep up with everything you might ask it to do.
You know, you talked about watching TV on your computer, your iPad, your desktop, whatever it may be.
Yeah,
more and more people are doing that these days, aren't they?
Yeah, I cut the cord, as the kids call it. Last year, I got rid of my Xfinity cable and the large monthly bill that came with it, and now I use YouTube TV.
Yeah.
So it's $65 a month. I mean, the problem is when I started last year, it was $50 a month. Now it's up to $65. Every time they add a new channel, they seem to add a couple dollars to the bill. But it's still cheaper than cable TV and has all the live channels I need. It's for watching sports and for my needs, watching sports and watching news. We use so many streaming services now. Like my kids, they just want to hop on Netflix or, you know, Apple TV and find the shows they want to watch. I grew up, you'd click on cable and you'd flip around the channels until you landed on something. Now they have their shows, queued up, and so we just didn't need cable TV anymore. I'm a convert.
Yeah,
and not looking back.
But that being said, you still need internet.
I'm still paying Xfinity for my internet each month, but you know, I had to do that whether I was paying for their cable package on top of it or not. Yep. So you still need a internet provider. You just probably don't need your cable TV anymore.
So you find it cheaper then to have the internet, regardless of what provider it may be, in addition to like a YouTube TV. You know, I had YouTube TV for a while. And it started, I believe the first price that I paid was $29.95 or something like that. And then, as you said, it incrementally goes up over the months and years.
Yeah, they all do it. They're all about $65 a month now. The only one that's cheaper than that is Sling TV, which is one of the original ones. They have two packages. I think actually they just went up to $35. They kind of split their offerings in half. So you can get like the blue plan or the orange plan, and they're each they were $30 for a while. I think it just went up last week to $35 a month. So if you can find the channels, like one's kind of ESPN based plus a bunch of others, and the ones I think the Fox channels. So if you find the channels you need are in one of those silos, then you can get away with $35 a month.
You could just go online to take a look at the different packages for Sling, the orange and the blue, is that what you said?
Yeah. And the nice thing about these streaming services is there's no like annual contract. You know, if you want to get a good deal from Xfinity, you're going to sign up for 12 months, and whether you want it or not, you're paying that each month. These, you can sign up for YouTube TV for a month. And actually, they make it even easier. You don't even have to cancel. You can just pause your subscription. So let's say... there's no sports coming up in for the next month. Maybe I'll just pause my subscription until March Madness starts. This is actually a real thought I'm having. I can pause my YouTube TV. I can save the $65, and then when March Madness is about to tip off, I can reactivate my YouTube TV and jump right back in.
And speaking of March Madness, you are an avid Ohio State Buckeyes fan, and Ohio State's ranked fourth in the nation right now. Matt,
true.
Is Ohio State going to win the Big Ten title?
I don't see why not, Dan. they're playing really well. This is a really fun team to watch. They've had some I wouldn't say boring, but they didn't really jump off the screen the last couple of years. But they really have a lot of fun players, and it's very un-Big Ten like. Their defense is suspect, but they have a lot of offensive weapons this year.
You know, Matt, I wanted to ask you about Alexa.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, lots of people I know have Alexa in their homes. I don't. But is Alexa spying on you? And I say that because
I should bring my wife in here. I got a Google speaker, so it's not the Alexa, but it's the Google version.
Yeah.
And my wife says, please unplug that. I don't want that thing listening to us. Like Dan, she's trained in the legal arts. She's a lawyer, and she's like, I just don't want that thing listening to, especially now that she's working from home more with mm-hmm. COVID. She's like, I don't want that thing listening to conversations I have with my clients. I don't even want it listening to conversations I'm having with you, the kids. I don't want Google listening. So I don't know. I feel like every now and then, even with our I feel like my phone's listening to me sometimes. Where yeah. we'll have a conversation about something, and then I'll go online, and there'll be an ad
exactly.
for a product yep. that's very similar to what we were just talking about. I'm like, how does it know that I'm
yeah.
having these conversations?
We've had that happen too. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, there's been, you know, whether it's intentional or not, that there's these, you know, you see these stories about you know, Google having apologized, like, oh, sorry, we were listening when we shouldn't have. Or we had a, you know, rogue employee that was you know, accessing logs or saving call logs that they shouldn't have been. It just seems like it's just open for abuse or ignorance. I don't know. I've been, thanks to my wife's attitude, I'm suspect of these devices, and so my Google speaker sits next to my Apple Watch, unplugged.
Yeah. No, but I say that because I have a friend of mine that was on the phone recently seeking some grief counseling. And a little while later, there's my Boston accent chiming in there. A little while later, Alexa chimed in and recommended a place related to exactly what this person was looking for. You know, so obviously,
yeah.
Obviously, yes. Alexa's listening to you.
I would agree that it is listening, and I'm uncomfortable with it. But like you, I have so many people in my life that have these devices and love them. My parents have one, and they think it's great, but I just don't I don't like it.
What, man?
I don't have a need for it. I don't need to speak to a speaker. I have a Bluetooth speaker I use, but I can just
yeah.
tap on my phone to play a song or play a podcast.
Yeah.
And I don't need to talk to my speaker.
Yeah. Has there ever been any investigation that you're aware of about these ads that pop up on your phone when you're same things happen to us? We're talking about different things, and next thing you know, you're on Facebook or you're just online. Next thing, there's an ad on that exact same, there's an internet ad on the exact same topic. Has there ever been any kind of investigation or write-ups on that or that you're aware of?
Not that I know of recently, no.
Yeah. And what's going on with Facebook and the, is Department of Justice, if you're aware of this, trying to break them up? Is that what's going on right now? In terms of Facebook and Instagram and some other platforms?
I mean, I think that's an ongoing talk about how to patrol these companies. But I don't think Facebook's in any danger of having to split off Instagram right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know they keep bringing Zuckerberg back in to defend his practices, but he seems to be able to deflect everything and just keeps trudging on.
Yeah, well, it seems like the tech world is evolving by the day, you know, and I'm you know, kind of removed from it myself. I mean, I do use Facebook once in a while, Twitter, but you know, that's pretty basic stuff. I mean, there are just so many, like you mentioned Clubhouse today. I'd never heard of that. There seems to be, you know, new apps and different ways to use your technical equipment every single day.
It is true. It's in every facet of our life. You know, to a worried degree. You ask my kids. It's like I'm like the screen police. It's like one of my jobs as a dad, and it's not a fun one.
And in terms of that, Matt, are there different filters, controls, or that kind of thing that you can do for some of the stuff to make sure that your kids are not delving into some of the other areas of the internet that are not appropriate?
Well, yes and no. I mean, like my kids have iPhones, so we all have the iPhones, so they have to, you know, when they want to download an app, I get an alert on my phone that I have to approve. I have to approve the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can set screen limits, so you can, you know, after a certain hour of the night, they can't access sites, so they can only have, you know, a couple hours on Instagram a day, which seems like it should be enough, but surprisingly, it's not when you're talking about my daughter. so, I mean, there are some controls, but, you know, nothing more effective than having a conversation with your child.
Yeah.
You know, just get the same clubhouse room together. That's what I'd say.
Right, right. Or just the same room.
Yes.
And you got it. So iPhones, you know, I know we got a little bit more time left, a little bit. iPhones, yeah. Someone's out there shopping. It seems like there's an iPhone that comes out every 6 months.
Every 12 months.
Yeah. Every 12 months.
Every September, basically, they announce the new phone. So
really?
We're up to number 12. Yeah.
iPhone 12.
iPhone 12.
What is the marginal value of getting iPhone 12 versus iPhone 11 if you're going to go get an iPhone right now?
I would say there's not much of a difference. The new thing with the 12 is they came out with the Mini, which is the first small phone they've released in 3, 4, 5 years. So if you are looking to downsize, you don't want a big brick in your back pocket, you can get the Mini. Otherwise, yeah, if you find a good deal on an 11, I'd hop on that.
How small is the Mini?
My wife just got one. It's it's maybe a half an inch shorter, and, you know, maybe a quarter inch narrower than my full size 11, but it's much, much lighter. Even lighter than you would expect, it's slightly smaller, but it's much, much lighter. So it just, it's not like pulling your pants down when you have it in your back pocket. So I was seriously considering it, but out of sheer laziness, I've just kind of rolled along with my 11. And now that we're almost halfway through the year to next September, I'll probably just wait and see what the 13. It's harder and harder for Apple to kind of come up with a killer app or to wow you with each new release. So the 12 didn't have any kind of shocking new feature that's going to radically change your mind of what an iPhone can and can't do.
So basically, the 12 was just smaller. That's it.
Well, yeah. I mean, they have a full size one too. Okay. You know, slightly better cameras and faster. Every year they come up with a slightly faster processor. But I mean, I feel like it's less important speed on an iPhone. My 11, I tap around and swipe, and it registers immediately. Right, there's no lag, so I don't. I'm not in need of any more speed for my iPhone. It's as fast as I need it. So really, it's more about are the cameras better? Is the design sleeker? Is it are they going to come up with a bigger screen? Are they going to, or new screen technology? The 13, allegedly, there's going to be new screen technology that'll be, better contrast and better better colors, more pixels, better and more efficient for longer battery life. And even there's a rumor that it might have an always-on screen where you'll always be able to see the clock and maybe the battery life remaining, and we can get notifications will pop up without having to tap to see to bring the screen back to life. So little things like that they can add each generation, but it's not like the first few years when each year there's like, whoa, the iPhone is it's completely different this year from last year. Now there's just more evolutionary changes rather than revolutionary.
one of the things on iPhones and in laptops that pops up on screen every now and then is updates. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to decipher whether or not that's a legitimate update or whether or not you click on it and it's, you know, something's going to crash your computer. Do you have any advice for people out there who, you know, are dealing with this? Is there an app that you can do, or is there some kind of way to kind of clean it up so you have peace of mind that when you click on an update, you're actually clicking on the real update, not clicking on some kind of, you know, virus or something?
Well, on iPhones, it's a pretty controlled environment where I don't think you should be too worried about getting an update on your iPhone. And if you are, you should just go into the settings app and go to the update page there, and that's where Apple's system updates reside, you know. And then in the App Store, you can go to the update tab on the App Store to see which of your apps are queued up for an update.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's more on a computer. You might see some updates that are that you don't need on, especially in Windows, if there's just a bunch of different apps from different developers all kind of competing for your attention on getting an update. But, you know, you just have to kind of take an extra second to be careful to read what it is instead of just blindly clicking update. You know, on Apple stuff, they're so tightly controlled. They don't, you know, you can't install anything outside of their App Store.
Okay.
So you shouldn't run into any trouble with that type of thing.
Unless you click on some random email within your iPhone.
Oh, yeah. So that's not an update. That would be, like a phishing scam.
Yeah, that would be just like, right.
Yeah. Dan, that prince from Nigeria, it does not,
it does not need $5,000 right now.
Yeah, right.
How about the updates themselves? I mean, you see things pop up on your phone or your iPad that this phone or iPad hasn't been backed up in 2 weeks or whatever it is. How necessary are those updates?
Well, I can lie and say it's necessary, but I get one. I think I just hit the year mark on my MacBook. I get one every other morning. Hey, you haven't updated your you haven't backed up your computer in 365 days.
Right.
But I feel like the Mac OS especially is a very stable operating system. I haven't had a terrible crash where I've lost work. And all my work I have in Google Docs, so that's backed up to that's saved on Google's servers, which are I believe are much safer than my own local hard drive that might crash at some point. So I feel like all my work is safe and safe. But you know, as a general practice, it's good to update your back up your computer, I'd say, every few months, especially if you have like a large photo library. I do back up my photo library on my computer to the cloud. I have my photos on my MacBook, but I back them up to Google's Photos app because they offer free unlimited storage. As long as they kind of take they call it optimized, an optimized version of your photos. So they're not full resolution backups, but they're pretty good. And it's free storage in the cloud. And again, I trust Google to keep its servers up and running much more than I trust myself to keep my computers up and running. So if my Mac would crash, my work is saved to Google and all my photos are saved. So I'm feeling pretty good. But this conversation has reminded me I probably should, now that I've reached the year anniversary, do a backup, find my hard drive in one of my drawers here in my office and pull it out and plug it into my MacBook. And I mean, I have no excuse. Apple makes it really easy to run a backup and back up your system. But
well, we know what you're doing right after this conversation.
I can't wait.
You're listening to Feltus and Kale. We're talking tech today on WKXL. We got Matt Elliott, tech guru, tech writer. Matt, you mentioned the cloud. What the heck is the cloud?
The cloud is servers you can access from the internet, you know, whether it's Google or it's Apple or it's Microsoft or Amazon. you are storing your data on their servers and accessing it from the internet instead of having a instead of storing it locally on like a hard drive on your computer or your phone. So that's what the cloud is: internet servers.
Interesting. So you're actually storing it on the internet server of whatever server you're using, rather than your own, rather than locally.
Right. So I have a local copy of all my photos, but then I have a backup in the cloud on Google's servers. So it kind of performs two functions. I have a second copy. So if my Mac, you know, if my house caught on fire, my Mac burned up, or someone stole my MacBook, and I lost my local copies of my photos, I still could go on, you know, log into Google Photos from my web browser on another computer, or from the Google Photos app on my phone, and access all my photos. And then I could, you know, if I had a catastrophic event where I lost my computer, I could then kind of re-download them to my new computer, or just, you know, view them from the through the cloud.
And speaking of photos, Matt, some of these iPhone camera features are just as good, if not better, than some of these handheld cameras, I think. Can you speak to that and speak to what iPhone you might recommend in terms of camera features?
Sure. The iPhone, I have an old Nikon camera, a little digital SLR that I, you know, that's probably 15 years old. I think it's like 6 megapixel. At the time, it was pretty high tech and I loved it. And now I haven't picked it up in probably since the iPhone like 10, like or 9, 2 or 3 years ago, just because I found my iPhone takes better pictures. I think we're up to 12 megapixels now. So that's how many, you know, how crisp your photo is going to look. The more pixels, the more dots in your photo, the better it's going to look. So my resolution on my photos is twice as good on my iPhone. Plus they have all the software now where, it can, you know, high dynamic range, HDR it's called, where your phone will take like 3 pictures of one scene and then combine them into one, so that you get details in the highest and kind of highest lights, brightest, you know, whites of the photo and the darkest portions of the photo, to give you a well-balanced image. And that's a nice trick. And I think last year they came out with night mode, so that if you're taking a photo at night, instead of having to turn on the flash that makes, you know, the foreground like overexposed and the background all washed out, now they have software that can kind of look at the scene and fill in the dark spots with details without blowing out the light spots, and you get these really cool shots at night that look not like daytime, but they look natural, even though there's some artificial software manipulation going on to make that happen. So I think it's really fun that the tools that Apple gives you to
Hey, Matt Elliott. Matt, yep. I have to jump in because we're running out of time. But you've been a great guest, and I can say that because I've understood most of it. And I'm not saying all of it, but I've understood most of your responses today. So that's pretty good, and got a lot of great information. And again, quickly, how can people read your articles again?
Well, if you're looking for a tech deal, you might come across some stuff I wrote on CNET. And if you're shopping for a laptop or a desktop, you can find me on find my reviews on PC Magazine.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it. Matt Elliott.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for being with us today.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Welcome back for our final moment here on this edition of Feldis and Kale. Don't forget, we have the Celtics coming up tonight against Denver. Celtics trying to get back on the winning track. And Dan just heard earlier this week that Nevada is thinking about moving up its presidential primary for 2024 to the next to last Tuesday of January in 2024. And along those lines, we are going to have Neil Levesque with us to talk about that and much more on the Thursday edition of Feldis and Kale. Neil, the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College.
Looking forward to it, Ken. And, you know, look, there's a law in the books in New Hampshire that we got to be first in any similar contest. So if that is a primary rather than a caucus, that's a big problem. It's been a bipartisan priority of everybody in New Hampshire to be first in the nation.
No doubt about it. Dan Feldes, Ken Kale, Feldes and Kale, right here on WKXL.